Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
Anybody coaching a youth team will have challenges. Kids whose parents think they should be playing more or playing another position. What kind of coach can you be if you can't see my kid should pitch? Kids who come to practice and forget their equipment. Kids who forget to come to practice. But how about trying to coach a team made up of youngsters who speak about 10 different languages? Youngsters who have in common only their poverty and their status as refugees. That was the challenge Luma Mufla faced when she started coaching the Fugees, short for refugees, in Clarkston, Georgia a few years ago. Warren St. John has written about Coach Luma in his new book, Outcasts United, A Refugee Team, An American Town. When we had the opportunity to speak this week, I began our conversation by asking Warren St. John to tell me a little bit about Coach Luma, who became something of an outcast herself, at least as far as her family in Jordan was concerned.
That's right. Luma is from Amman, Jordan. She's the daughter of a well-to-do Jordanian family. Her father went to college in the U.S. She went to Western schools in Amman and then attended Smith, the women's college in Northampton, Massachusetts. And after Smith, she decided that she liked life in the United States. She liked the opportunity for women in particular. She liked the possibility of determining her own life and her own story. And she felt her life in Jordan would be prescribed and she'd have to follow a very rote path. So she told her parents she was going to stay in the United States. And they were deeply hurt, deeply offended by this, and disowned her. So she was not a refugee in the way that her players were, but she was certainly severed from the world that she knew and felt comfortable with and was sort of set adrift in the U.S. to find a life here.
Describe for us Luma's coaching philosophy.
It's interesting. I think in many ways it's based on some extremely traditional, conservative principles that personal responsibility is paramount, self-reliance. Is important. It's a cornerstone of what she asks of her players. And the work ethic is intense. Luma's one of these people who, if she tells her team to meet at 8 a.m. To get on the bus to go to an away game, she's there at 7:55. And she does this consistently. And for kids, it's interesting. It's a very reassuring thing to have someone in their lives who is totally predictable, who always does what he or she says she's going to do. And the players like it and respond to it and start to sort of absorb this mode of being.
Once Coach Luma had begun to organize these teams of refugees, different age groups of kids into teams, who came up with the idea that they should be called the Fugees?
It's funny. The name is, it's of uncertain origin. No one really remembers exactly when it was applied or who came up with it. And it was sort of a nickname at first, of course, Fugees being short for refugees. And at some point along the way, as Luma registered her team for league play, she had to call them something. And and so she wrote down Fugees, and now that the name has stuck.
You write of these kids who were divided into the 13 and unders, the 15 and unders, and the 17 and unders that, quote, they sensed that they were underdogs and connected with each other over the prospect of evening the score once the whistle blew. Tell me about the specific ways in which some of these youngsters were underdogs and how they hoped to even the score.
In the most basic sense, these are very economically challenged families, refugees from Africa and the Middle East, typically arrive with nothing but the clothes on their backs. And in fact, they often arrive in debt because they have to repay the cost of the one-way tickets to the United States. And there's another very sort of persistent challenge that the kids face, and that is just trying to figure out where they fit in this new world. If a kid from, say, Liberia or Congo goes to the local public school, the kids in that public school, most of them may have never heard of the country where this child came from. The child may have an accent of some kind. They get teased for that. They have cultural habits and customs that the other kids don't understand. So they're sort of thought of as other and outside the norm at school, where, of course, like kids everywhere, they want to fit in, they want to be accepted by their peers. Then if they sort of adapt some of the Americanisms, maybe they untuck their shirt, maybe they start talking like Americans, and they go home, their mother says, "We can't dress like that in Africa. What are you doing? Or we don't wear our hair like that in Africa. You need to uphold our traditions and our way of living." And so wherever they go, they're not quite accepted or on the inside. And because of that, the Fugees became this very secure place for the boys, where because everybody's from a different country, there is no normal that you have to constantly try to appeal to. You just accept that everyone is radically different from the next person. And that's a very evening sort of proposition.
No, it struck me that one of the most visible signs of the underdog nature of the Fugees was they would play these teams from suburban Atlanta, and the other team would have lots of parents on the sidelines with coolers and orange slices and banners and everything else. And on the Fugees sideline, as often as not, there would be nobody.
If you're a refugee new to this country, you're probably working a night shift or on weekends. You may not have a car. It's unlikely you have a car. And going to your child's youth sports activity is very far down the list of priorities. Most of the parents are just happy that their child is in a safe place and sort of taken care of so that they can get down to the business of trying to survive. Meanwhile, and I think any youth sports parent listening to this knows what youth sports parents do in this country. We get our folding chairs and our blankets and our tote bags and our multicolored sports drinks. And I mean, we are really basically bivouacked, on the sidelines for the long haul. That's not the case with the Fugees parents. So I think in the 5 months or so that I spent around the team intensively, and even since then I've been to many games, I've seen perhaps one or two of the Fugees parents at a game.
Luma feels that she has to create a balance with these youngsters. She is a disciplinarian. She kicks children off the team for swearing. At one point, she closes down the whole under 15 team because several of the guys on that team are disregarding her rules. But she's also been known to take off her own shoes and give them to a player so that he wouldn't have to play in his socks. So after a while, did anything you saw her do surprise you?
There were so many surprises along the way. One of those surprises was when I was sitting watching her. She was really paying attention to one of her team's practices while the other team ran laps around the field. And when the younger team running laps got behind her and out of sight of her, they would walk. And they would walk about 20 yards. And then as they would start to appear, in her peripheral vision on the other side, they would start running again. And I was standing right next to Luma. And she continued on with the older boys' practice, never said a word to the younger boys, and then dismissed the older boys, said, "Okay, you're done, go home." And she stood there, and it was at that point that she normally would have called them in and said, "Okay, let's do drills." But she just stood there, and she let them keep running. And they kept running, and they kept running. And after about 25 or 30 minutes, now they've been running an hour. And they slowly figured out that she knew, and so she caught them, and she made them essentially fess up to this. And there were all these little teaching moments like that where she let the kids figure it out, and essentially they had to confess and issue their own punishments.
Besides the issues her players brought to the team, Luma had to deal with a town that was at best ambivalent about the presence of thousands of refugees in general and several youth soccer teams in particular. How did she deal with those attitudes?
The town of Clarkson was designated a resettlement center, and in the span of a little over a decade, the town went from being a basically homogenous, sort of down on its luck southern town, to having a third to a half of its residents from around the world. There are students from over 50 countries at the Clarkston High School, just to give a sense of the radical change that took place in the town because of resettlement. And a lot of the older residents woke up really almost unaware that this process was happening until it was too late for them. Their whole town had been transformed. So some left and said, I'm out of here. I can't, this is not for me. And others stayed and adjusted and reached out. And then still others stayed and were quite bitter about everything that had happened. And soccer, being the international game, particularly soccer played by refugees who looked different from the locals, really became a symbol of all the change that had happened in Clarkston. And there was a sort of backlash against the game of soccer itself because it was seen as evidence of how much the town had changed.
I want you to read a passage from Outcasts United just to give our listeners a sense of how Luma's efforts sometimes panned out. You're writing about a particular practice where Luma is concentrating on the under-17s, but she can't help but notice what the more or less unsupervised under-13s are up to.
Sure. On Wednesday, though, as Luma was watching her under-17 team scrimmage, she looked over to see the 13s running together in a kind of chorus line. The faster players had slowed down for the slower players, who in turn had sped up so as not to hold their teammates back. They ran like this quietly for 15 minutes or so, at which point the boys began to clap in rhythm with their strides. Eventually, the boys initiated a call-and-response chant. "Who are the kings?" someone would shout to the group in time. "The Fugees," the team would answer. Luma remained focused on the older boys' scrimmage, but the 13s wouldn't be ignored. They chanted louder with each pass until Luma finally turned around to see what the fuss was all about. When the 13s saw they had their coach's attention, someone else called out, "Who is the queen?" "Luma," the boys shouted. When Luma shook her head to convey her befuddlement, the boys tumbled to the ground in laughter. It was a small, ridiculous moment, but also a sign of more significant developments. Boys from 13 different countries and a wide array of ethnicities, religions, and languages were creating their own inside jokes. Even Mohammed Mohammed, the Iraqi Kurd whose family had arrived in the United States only a few months before the season and who spoke almost no English at all, was chanting at the top of his lungs and laughing as if someone had just told him the funniest joke he'd ever heard.
Your book recounts the adventures of the three divisions of Fuji's teams of several years ago, 2006. Is Luma still coaching in Clarkston?
Absolutely. She has four teams now. She has started a school for the Fugees, which gives them the kind of intensive instruction they need to make up for not only the language and cultural differences, but many of these kids have come from countries where the education system had been completely dismantled because of violence and political turmoil. And unfortunately, when they come to the U.S., frequently the public school system will look at them and say, well, you're 15 or 16. You may not speak English. You may never have been to school in your own country. But we really can't put you any lower than sixth grade because of age appropriate, you know, designations. So these are kids who are in sixth or seventh grade, and they've never had anything. They never had preschool through fifth or sixth.
Warren, you spent some serious time with these kids and with Coach Luma. Did you get a sense of the extent to which the experience of the Fugees can work as a model for cooperation beyond youth soccer in suburban Georgia?
Well, I can say it certainly changed my life completely, and I'm well beyond the age of youth sports. I found that the story of the Fugees in Clarkston was, to me, incredibly inspiring and motivating because it showed really the best things about our country and our culture, our ability to selflessly help other people, and the American capacity to improvise one's way out of the most complex social situations. Clarkston, Georgia is just, by all measures, a sort of social train wreck. It should never work. This people from this many places should never be able to communicate and function and get along. And yet, it's happening. And that's what the book is about, is how that process came to be. And it's not just a question of sort of an angelic presence who parachuted into this world and magically fixed everything. I think that if that were the case, maybe there wouldn't be much in it for the rest of us, except just to hope we encounter those people. I think the most heartening thing about the early feedback I've gotten from readers is just the sense that it makes people want to go do something, want to get involved, want to help out. And so in that sense, it's a wonderful model that I think extends well beyond the sphere of youth sports.
Warren St. John is the author of Outcasts United, a refugee team in American town published by Spiegel and Grau. He spoke to me from the studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting in Atlanta. Warren, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's been fun.
My conversation with Warren St. John about his new book, Outcasts United, a Refugee Team in American Town, will be featured in this week's program. I'll also be talking with football writer Mike Reese about this weekend's NFL draft, by which the Detroit Lions will attempt to restore their roar. Gee, I love that kind of talk. We'll be updating the NBA and NFL playoffs, of course, and we'll have a story about the science of hockey, including the physics of the Slapshot 101. And there will be a quiz. No, there won't, but you'll have to write a paper. No, you won't. Just join us, and remember, you can always listen to the show at onlyagame.org.